Blog Talk Radio. Joining us tonight, this is Tanya Hathaway with TNT Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on the Marty Oakley TS Radio Show. Thank you so much, Marty, for providing this forum for many of us advocates and whistleblowers and information givers, and we appreciate you greatly. And I will mention this at the end of the show as well, but please tune in to the next show, which will be Tuesday night with Carly Walden, Medical Kidnapping and Murder at 7 p.m. This is an ongoing show once a week for Carly Walden, who's been offering some great information and has had on numerous guests and continues to build the audience here on this network. And again, this is Tanya Hathaway with TNT Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told. And we, too, are building quite an audience on Marty's platform. And we are here every single Sunday night at 6 p.m. Central Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and so on. You guys can figure the rest of that out. We've got quite a story to share with you tonight. And this has been going on for a few years. That it's made national news, actually. It's an event, something that happened in Oklahoma City. And there was a raid that took place in what was alleged to be a pill mill factory in a pain management doctor's facility, and we're going to hear more about that and how others got involved or have been charged with crimes along with the doctor who has claimed his innocence, and how other people got pulled into this, what's behind the scenes going on. There's quite a few articles in the newspaper. I've actually shared a couple of them on Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed about the initial raid and the indictments that have taken place. And we've got some court dates in the trial that's coming up. And I have to say, with what short time that I had to get the show ready and the recent posting of the promotion, I've heard from quite a few people that are very upset about this doctor being charged and other people and their lives being ripped apart, and that there are stories behind the scenes, like I said, and we're going to get into that a little bit. But in particular, we're going to speak to Mike Oxley, who has come forward where no one else, no mainstream reporting agencies have tried to talk, apparently, to other people that have been charged. The statements have come from only what seems to be the state, not any of the charged people here. And so their voices aren't being heard. So the narrative seems to be very narrow. And Micah said, geez, I tried talking to other radio shows or TV shows. Correct me anytime I'm wrong once I introduce you. And nobody's willing to tell my story. No one's willing to tell my story or anybody else's. It's just coming straight from the state. So this is why it's so important to have other outlets to be able to share the story, and hopefully we can take it upon ourselves to rally and get more people willing to talk about this and see what we can do about this to help out those that are coming forward and telling what they feel and seems to be really the truth. So before I go much farther, I would like to say that I'm not a lawyer. I'm an advocate. I'm a whistleblower. I'm a journalist. I'm here to help other people move forward in finding their justice that is due them, as I have taken on doing it for myself as well. And I don't want to do it alone. And there's power in numbers, people, so we need to come forward. So I cannot offer any kind of legal advice. Anybody that comes on this show has been well vetted, and to the best of my ability and knowledge, the people that come on the show have and are telling their stories pretty darn accurately from what I'm able to pull out from it all. And a lot of things are not shown on the docket of the courts, and it always makes me wonder, why on earth is it that some things are available at the clerk and other at the clerk's office, supposedly, and other things you can pull it right up in the tips of the PDF from the court documents. Just amazes me that the stories seem to be controversial are the ones that are the hardest to get at. So, you know, we're going to break through that right now, and I'm going to introduce Mike Oxley. Is it Mike Oxley or Mike Oxley?
It's Oxley.
Oxley. Okay. Yay. Well, thanks for being on with us, Mike. How did I do so far?
You did awesome. I appreciate you letting me tell my story.
Well, I'm really glad that you're here, and I know that it takes a lot of courage, even though you've been wanting to tell your story, but it's even that much more scary when you've been willing to tell your story to the same people that are telling the story that the state tells them, but they're not willing to tell your story. Now, why do you think that is?
They don't want the other side to be out. They don't. They just want their narrative heard so they can use public opinion in their favor.
Right. Right.
Because I was told in the beginning not to say anything and to be quiet, so.
And you were told that was in your best interest, wasn't it?
Yes.
And do you mind saying who told you that?
No, it was my attorney. He had told me that a prosecutor friend for him that worked for the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics told him to tell me to lay low, not say anything, because if I went public on the media or social media, that it would make the lead agent very upset and that she would come after me because she had an axe to grind. So I did what they told me to do, and I laid low, and they said it would pass me over, and obviously it didn't.
Yeah. She has an axe to grind anyways, doesn't she? And why is that?
When I went and talked to them after I got suspended from the sheriff's office, it really appeared that everything I told them, everything that they asked me, and my answers were I was lying. And when I told them I wasn't going to lie for them, her response was, well, you're lying for the doctor. And it's like, no, I'm not. I can't tell you I saw something when I didn't see it. And that made them kind of mad. And as I left, they told me I would be sorry and I would regret it. I was just like, okay, whatever.
So are you sorry you regret lying for them?
What's that?
Are you sorry? Do you regret not lying for them?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Because I have to be able to sleep at night, and that would be against everything that I am.
Okay. So before we go too much further, why don't you tell our audience that does not know the backstory a little bit about what happened, when it happened, and you know, the key players involved. You know, we know it's Dr. Harvey Jenkins is one of them. If you wish to share any other names, that's totally up to you. But let's get to the heart of the story so that our listeners are going to understand this has been going on for several years now, hasn't it?
Yes. Okay. In 2010, I was contacted by another deputy wanting to know if I was interested in a part-time job. And I was like, sure. So we all showed up. It was me and two other deputies showed up to this place, and they told us what the jobs were going to be and how much the pay was going to be. So we picked our days. We wanted to work, and we worked. He was a doctor, a pain management, orthopedic pain management specialist, and he saw a lot of Medicaid patients. We did security there. It started off with me doing Wednesday and Thursday, another deputy doing Monday, and another working on Tuesday. Well, eventually one quit, and the other deputy had 2 days. I had 2 days. Then later, after about, a year and a half, 2 years, the other deputy quit, and I ended up taking on all 4 days. In January of 2015, it was just like any other day. The clinic was open. Patients were going back during their UAs, waiting to be seen. And the state raided the office. It was the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics and the Attorney General's Medicaid Fraud Unit. They came in, raided the place, told everybody to put their hands up. I was told to go stand outside with another agent, and I just stood outside with him. And
now, were you carrying, so your position is your security, do you have a gun, do you have a...
I was in uniform. I was working off-duty.
Off-duty?
For the sheriff's office, yeah.
Right, okay. Okay, does that mean you carry a gun?
Yes.
Okay, all right, and also you were working as not an employee necessarily as you shared it with me. You actually were self-employed, contractor.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you got the 1099. You're not an employee. Yet I know that I saw in one of the articles that, you know, you were referred to as an employee, I believe.
Yeah, no, we it was all contract work. We, you know, did the 1099s. It was just like a subcontract.
Okay.
Because we just provided security. I got no benefits or anything from the office.
Okay. So I just wanted to. All right. So then you were told to go stand outside with another security officer.
Correct. It was one of the, I believe, Attorney General agents that was there. And as I stood outside, the agents were, I guess, raiding the inside of the office. And I was out there for probably about 20 minutes. And I ended up helping them get the patients out because they said the clinic was closed. I was helping tell the patients, hey, you guys need to go. They're closed. They're being raided. About 20 minutes into it, I was asked to come inside, and I talked to a agent, which was April Carpenter. I guess she was the lead Medicaid fraud agent. And we were in the doctor's office, his actual personal office. And she was asking me a few questions, you know, like, well, what do you do here? And I told her I'm doing security. You know, as of right now, I'm helping them check people in at the front desk. I collect their co-payments. I'm just sitting up front. And she asked me a few questions, you know, like, well, have you seen anything illegal, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. And she's like, okay, well, you're going to have to go. I've called the sheriff's office, talk to your boss, and they're sending a deputy out. You need to leave before the media gets here. So I was like, okay. So the other deputy showed up. I left. I later found out the next day that I guess they didn't have a warrant in hand. I was told that when they first raided the office, I guess while I was outside, that one of the first things they did was unplug and turn off his security surveillance system.
It's interesting, isn't it? Now, why on earth would they do that when they're supposed to be collecting evidence and data?
Exactly. I thought that was kind of strange. It's like, you know, I can understand them wanting to collect the surveillance equipment to view it, to see, you know, of any wrongdoing or what happened, but to be the first thing that you go after to turn off, I always thought that was kind of strange.
Right.
You know,
they could,
like, are you
they,
guys...
they could do that going out the door on their way out
right.
after they've already collected everything. Right.
Right. And it's the first thing they zeroed in on to turn off.
Hmm.
And
that's
then, like
mighty
I said,
fishy.
Yeah, and I never saw a warrant when they came in, and I was told that they never had a warrant on site until like 45 minutes later. But, you know, they raided the place. They closed his office down for the rest of that day. They took his computers, his files, his servers for the computers, the backup servers, and they told him, you can reopen tomorrow. You know, we're not shutting you down. You can reopen. So the next day they reopened, and it was kind of like Stone Ages because they didn't have any computers, so they had to do everything on paper and make phone calls and all that. I mean, it was a lot of work. And they did that for about 3 days. And I guess in the meantime, the doctor, being the doctor, made fun of them on his Facebook page, which was public. And he taunted them and everything else, and everybody in the office was just kind of like, what's he doing? It's like, don't do that.
Right.
Well, 3 days later, they
this
came
is Dr.
back.
Jenkins, right? Like he
yeah.
was
yeah.
saying
yeah,
something
was...
about. And what year was this? Because we know that you started working there in 2010. So unless I missed it, what year was this that the raid actually took place?
It was January 2015.
January 2015. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And what, now it sounds as though there was some, political changes that were going on or new elections that were taking place or the preparatory,
yes, they had a, I guess the Attorney General Scott Pruitt, it had been rumored that he was going to start running for governor of Oklahoma. And we all thought, you know, because he was raiding pill mills, or not pill mills, but pain management doctors all around the state, because he was big against pain management. He's against, you know, marijuana laws. He's against a lot of stuff. So we think that he was doing this for a political, you know, look what I did, elect me as governor. Because Oklahoma
right.
has a very large opioid addiction.
Okay.
So he was using it, I believe, to, you know, start his campaign. But, of course, you know, President Trump picked him for the EPA, so that never happened.
Right, right, right. Okay, so so the other pill mill raids seemed to be legitimate as far as you knew, and yet they just got carried away when they came after this doctor. Is that what your feelings are?
Well, yeah, because, you know, we had heard stories like, you know, when they raided these doctor's offices that they, the doctor had, you know, either some of his patients have died because he overprescribed, you know, or he wrote them scripts that were like for 3 months at a time, which were, you know, outrageous. And we're all like,
yeah.
wow, yeah, that they it sounds like they weren't doing what they were supposed to. And when they
mm-hmm.
raided his office, and of course, after all of this, now I catch myself wondering, okay, did they lie about them as well? But the other doctor's offices that they raided and charged, they only charged the doctor. They didn't charge his staff. And they raided two or three of them, and two or three of them ended up being charged and arrested. But for some reason, in this instance, they arrested a handful of his staff.
Right, including you as an outside contractor.
Correct, because it was the doctor, his office manager slash owner, which was Tashonda, three nurses. There was Julie, I can't remember what her name is. It was
and then
Julie
there's
one,
Taylor.
Yes, Taylor, and then there was...
Elise.
Yeah, Elsie. And Elsie wasn't
oh,
even
Elsie.
Working there. She had left about a year and a half, 2 years prior to that. that they charged her anyway.
And that's interesting.
Yeah,
so she
and
had
well,
left
not,
and they
yeah, and they went after. They actually, I think, picked her up in Arizona. She was completely out of the state.
So from what you've witnessed, I mean, were you ever in the room with the doctor and his patients?
No, I wasn't. And that is one of the things that when April Carpenter, when I went in to talk to them, because, once they closed the office, I left and went on to other endeavors. And I got a call from my undersheriff one day, and he's like, you need to come in. And I was like, okay. And I came in, and they're like, we need your badge. You're being suspended because you're under investigation. And I'm like,
how did that
what?
Feel? Yeah.
Oh, it hurt. It's like I've been at this job for 16 years. I was kind of burned out on it to a degree, but it hurt because I had given 16 years of my life to this job. I had a good reputation. People respected me. Even people that weren't in law enforcement that I had dealings with out on the streets, they were just like, man, you're all right.
Yeah.
So it hurt. It hurt a lot. And that's when they told me, I was like, what am I supposed to do? Because that took away all my income. And they told me, well, go talk to them and see what they want and just do what they tell you to do. So I was like,
which
okay.
Which was lie.
So, well, he didn't know. I just, I ended up leaving, and I called the AG's office, and I said, okay, what do I need to do to fix this? And they go, can you come in and talk to us? And I'm just like, sure. I don't have anything to hide. All I can tell them is what I saw. I had the truth with me. And I went in to go talk to them, and the next thing I know, they're escorting me into a room, which was an interrogation room. They read me my rights, told me I wasn't under arrest. I didn't think anything about it. I was just like, hey, they just made a mistake. I was naive in thinking that they were looking for the truth. And as we sat down, they asked me these questions like, well, what did the doctor talk to his patients about? And I was like, I have no idea. I'm not back there. You're lying. How long did he visit his patients? I have no idea. I'm sitting up front. And they're like, right. You're lying. Every question that they ask, we know he didn't UA every patient. Yes, he did. It's in the file. You've got all of his files. Look it up. You're lying. You're lying. It was just everything I said was you're lying.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting frustrated because I'm like, wow, this is a joke. They're asking me questions that I have no knowledge about. They asked me about prescriptions, and I told them, I said, well, yeah, the nurse asked me to take some prescriptions to the doctor's house and have them sign them and bring them back. And I was like, and I didn't believe anything that was wrong with that, and I came out and I told them that up front. And they were just like, so you took prescriptions to his house and brought them back? And I was like, yeah. And when I brought them back, I went back up front and continued to check people in and do my job.
Well, the doctor needs to sign prescriptions, so nobody else was signing them for him, right?
Right.
Okay. So they asked you to do something that had to be done before they could dispense the prescriptions.
Right.
That's my understanding. Okay.
But, yeah, everything that I told them was just you're lying, and I finally got upset. And I said, okay, I'm done with this. I came here to tell you guys the truth and to tell you that you're making a mistake here. I was like, the doctor, no, he's not a perfect man. And he makes mistakes. Yeah, he comes to work late. I was honest about everything that I had seen and witnessed up there.
Right.
But I was like, I'm out. And they started getting upset. And they're like, you need to tell us what we want to hear. And I'm just like, I'm not going to tell you that I saw something when I didn't. I'm not going to lie for you. And Carpenter's response is, well, you're lying for the doctor.
Now,
like,
Carpenter,
no.
Can you remind everybody who Carpenter is, please?
April Carpenter. Is the lead Medicaid fraud agent for the Oklahoma Attorney General's office.
Okay. Okay.
But, I mean, she was just like, you're lying for him. And I'm like, no, I'm not lying for him, and I'm not lying for you. And I've got an OBN guy back there, and he's just like, well, you're going to be sorry. you're going to be sorry.
Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics.
Correct.
Everybody.
Yes.
OBN, Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics.
And then, of course,
he's telling you you're going to be sorry too.
Yes. Yeah. He was. There was one guy in there was just like, "You're going to be sorry. You're going to be sorry. We gave you a chance, and you're going to be sorry." And they just started. You know, you're a discredit to your uniform and your badge. You used it to work, and I'm like, "Excuse me." I was like, "I'm out. Bye." And Carpenter walked me to the entrance, and I'm just like, wow. And you know, she was trying to make small talk with me about how it's snowing outside, and I'm just kind of looking at her like, you just accused me of everything, and now you're making small talk. And I was like, have a nice day, and I walked out.
Right.
I ended up hiring an attorney because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't really think anything was going to happen because, you know, if there was any wrongdoing, the doctor would be accountable for that, but I didn't really see anything. So I was like, it's nothing. I'm just going to, like my chief deputy said, it's just a political thing. You'll get your job back. Just lay low, do what they say. Your badge is at my desk when you get cleared.
Right.
Well, obviously.
They wanted you back, in other words.
Yeah, yeah, because I had a good rapport with them. I had no write-ups, no complaints. It was 16 years of, I gave my life and soul to that place, and they knew I was good at my job, that I was dedicated.
Right, right. Jeez, I'm so sorry. Whoa, that's huge. That's absolutely huge. And that's your living.
Yeah. And, I mean, I looked at law enforcement as we're actually there to be there for the people, to protect and serve them. There's more to law enforcement than, some like to write tickets and arrest people. That's not how I saw it. I saw it how it was, 30 years ago. But, yeah, I walked out of that office and didn't think anything about it. Thought, well, I've got to find me a job. I was unemployed for 6 months trying to find something, homeless, couch surfing on people's couches before I could get back on my feet.
Yeah.
I finally get back on my feet, and a year later, it was April of 2016, I'm out working, and I'm doing my route, and a supervisor calls me and says, hey, where are you at? And I'm like, hey, I'm on the street. Well, he pulls up, and it's not uncommon that they come out and check on you and talk to you.
Right.
He comes out, I get out of my truck, and all of a sudden the Dodge Durango comes flying up, and these two agents get out, and they're like, you're under arrest. And I'm just like, excuse me? I'm like looking at my supervisor going, what's going on here? And I'm like, what are you arresting me for? And they're like, we'll tell you when you go to the jail. And I'm like, no, wait, what's going on? And that's when I noticed the lanyard of one of the agents said Oklahoma Attorney General's office, and about that time it clicked, and I'm like, oh, April Carpenter, she's gonna put the screws to me to put me under some stress, under pressure to tell her what she wants to hear. So they arrest me, they put me in the car, and I'm asking, what are you guys arresting me for? And they refuse to tell me. They're like, we're not gonna tell you until you get into the jail. And working in law enforcement, even though I was a reserve deputy the last 5 or 6 years, I was just like, okay, this isn't right. You have to tell me what I'm being charged with. They refused.
Right.
So I asked, well, what's my bond? They told me my bond was $135,000, and my heart sank because I was like, oh, my gosh, what did they charge me with?
$135,000.
Yeah, I was like, well, wow, wait a minute. What's going on here? Because I was expecting it was going to be some stupid little charge, where it's like a $5,000 or $10,000 bomb, but it's $135,000.
And you have 26 different counts against you. Is that right?
Yes. When I got to the jail, they finally showed me the charge sheet as I was getting booked in.
Which you
have
to get a copy of, by the way. Is that right?
You're supposed to.
Which is another story.
they're supposed to tell you what you're being charged with. They didn't do that. When I got to the jail, they showed me a very bad copy that you could barely read. And it was 30 felonies. One was like practicing medicine without a license, which just blew me away because I was just like, wow, excuse me? Then there were 12
charges. So you're practicing
charges.
Medicine, yet you didn't sit in the doctor's office with anybody. You didn't sign any prescriptions. You didn't evaluate anybody or anything like that, right?
No, but the only thing I did with patients was is when they came in, I said hi, I checked them in. Some of the patients had been coming there for a long time, so I'd kind of made a rapport with some of them, and we'd kind of joke around, but I never saw a patient. I never did any vital signs. I never asked them how they were feeling on pain. I never did any of that. I was never back there. So that kind of blew me away.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy and serious.
Right.
And then I looked at the next 12 charges, which were all the same. It was one charge they'd stacked 12 times, and it was distribution of CDS 2,000 feet from a park.
Controlled.
And when I saw that.
Drug controlled.
Controlled dangerous substances.
Dangerous substance, okay.
Yeah, 2,000 feet from a park, which is a thing that the law came out with several years ago that doubles the fines and can double the time that you do in prison, and that's why they use that to...
Right. Similar
to
a school, if you're close
correct.
To a school within... Okay.
And the park's not even a park. It's a field with a couple big, giant soccer goals on it that adults go out, I guess, play soccer on Saturdays and Sundays. So
okay.
I'm looking at
that. And it's
not
as if you were guilty of it anyways.
Correct.
Because
correct.
You weren't. Okay.
No, and like I said, there was those were charges 1 through 12. Actually, the second one was conspiracy to distribute, but for some reason that has been taken off, and now they're all just distribution. It just shows that there was distribution. So as I finish reading down, I'm like, okay, 1 through 12 is distribution 2,000 feet from the park. I'm like, oh, my gosh. The next one is like identity theft. And there's about 6 or 7 counts of those, and I'm just like, identity theft? I'm like, what? What are they talking about? I'm just completely lost. The next couple charges are
and then you
Medicaid.
But you actually said something to me while we were talking about this that had to do with when Dr. Jenkins was out at one point, and there was another doctor that needed to step in for him. It was Dr. Nielsen, was it?
Correct. Yeah, Dr. Jenkins had gotten sick. He had gotten double pneumonia.
Okay.
And had to be put into the ER, and he spent about 3 or 4 months in ICU, and he actually almost died a couple times. So while he was gone, they hired another doctor, and her name was Dr. Nielsen. She came in, and she saw some of his patients. They had asked her if she wanted to have her name scanned into the computer, so because not all the prescriptions have to be signed. I think it's only the scheduled narcotics.
Certain
you have,
controlled
you know,
ones, right, okay.
Right, that you have to have an actual signature. It can't be printed. So from, you know, my understanding and from what even the doctor told me, she was all excited about it and talking about how, you know, I had to sign my name 5 times before I could finally get one that I liked. It's like, okay. So, she was excited about it, but they put her name into the system, and she saw patients for, like I said, it was about 3 or 4 months, and, you know, they printed off scripts, because they had patients that came in, the existing patients came in every 28 days, and some of these patients have been coming to him for years, even before
and
I
this
even
this is all about
there.
Pain management, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And, I mean, he had new patients, like he might have a total of maybe 4 or 5 new patients a week that would come in. But I guess what happened was is when the doctor came back, he got out of the hospital and he came back. Dr. Nielsen left. She went to another hospital somewhere else. And they went back to business as normal. Well, I guess in a few weeks, they, you know, were just printing off scripts for the next patients for the next day. They didn't really look at them. And I guess some of them still had Nielsen's name in the signature box. Well, they saw these patients, gave them the scripts. A couple pharmacies called and said, hey, Dr. Jenkins is back, right? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, well, you got a prescription with this other doctor's name on it. Is she still in there? I'm like, nope, let me transfer you back to the nurses. So I transferred him back to the nurses. From my understanding, they corrected it. They took her name off, put Jenkins back on, and they never had another issue with it. That's where they're saying the identity theft was, is that they stole that doctor's name and put him on scripts.
So I'm just, you know, it makes me wonder. I mean, obviously that's a mistake and that is not a good thing. And okay, so if he needs to be charged with something that might be the, I don't know if it would be identity theft unless he did that purposefully, but it sounds as though it would be more like negligible something. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
It was just like a mistake because from my understanding, when they first heard about it, they never had another issue or phone call about it because they fixed the problem. Or at least I'm guessing they did because I never heard anything else about it. And
Tanya?
For the state discharge.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You have a caller waiting here. Hi, you're on the air with Tanya. Did you have a question or comment for their guest?
Yeah, Marty, it's Randy.
Yes.
When they go to the, I wanted to find out.
We can't
Hi,
get
Randy.
You. Randall, we're losing you.
Yeah, Randy, if you can call back from an area where we can hear you, we would love to hear what you have to say about this.
Go ahead, Tanya.
Okay, so, Mike, we're going to keep going until
okay.
We can hear back from this caller and see what he has to say, okay?
But yeah, I was really shocked that they charged me with that because the only people that could print prescriptions were the nurses in the back, the doctor, and the office manager because they had a special printer just for the scripts because it was special paper, and they were the only ones that had anything to do with that. The rest of us in the office had no access to that or because you had to have a special password and all that stuff. So I was kind of shocked that they charged me with that because they charged me with everything that they charged the other staff members. They basically blanket charged every one of us.
Right, right.
So I was just like, wow, what?
Yeah, so you did the same things that the doctor is doing, supposedly, and yet you're kind of saying that you, from our discussion, and from what I've heard from other people that have posted about this already, is that this doctor was, you know, somebody who has truly made a difference in people's lives with helping handle their pain management. I mean, we know that there is a pain management for a reason. I mean, heck,
right.
I went to see pain management for my neck and for my back for years. I refused any kind of opioids or whatnot, but that was just me. I was getting other kinds of treatments, but sometimes those other treatments just don't work, and people somehow need to survive. And you know, I've seen some testimonials
yep.
on Injustice in Oklahoma Facebook page where I've posted about this show that are just, they bring tears to my eyes where it's, you know, people are saying really good things about this doctor. Like you said, he might not be perfect. Maybe he came in late, you know, and I'm not here to promote the doctor because I haven't even talked to the doctor, quite honestly.
Right,
I've only
right.
heard what you've had to say about him. And you've been very candid about it. But there's a lot that you don't know because you weren't in the room. So you can't say. You know,
exactly.
what took place in the rooms. You're just speaking on your own behalf and how and what you know. But you also did tell me, Mike, that that they took the steps that, as far as you know, that they're supposed to take, like if a prescription was changed, upped, or lowered, that they would not be given that renewal prescription or that prescription unless they brought back what was left in that monthly bottle, right? Can you explain that to me a little bit or to the audience a little bit, to the listeners?
Well, you're talking about like if someone was having an allergic reaction to their medications?
Okay, right. That's how you
yeah.
brought it up, right.
Yeah, because there were some people that, you know, would be like, I can't take this. It makes me itch. It makes me sick. It gives me a headache. So he was like, okay, and, you know, he would rewrite them a new prescription for something else that may not make them sick, but he would take their old prescription because apparently, you know, he was like, I don't want you taking this with this other stuff because it could be fatal. I don't want you selling it. And I always saw that. I was like, you know, that makes sense. Because if you're writing someone a prescript for oxycodone, you're not going to want to give them hydrocodone or, you know, whatever. I don't know which ones are compatible with each other. But he would take it so they wouldn't hurt themselves or sell it. And I always thought, that makes sense. I can see that.
Right.
And that's
and it sounds like it's kind of unlike what some of the other pill mills allegedly were doing that did get busted, and it was only the doctor themselves. And some people actually died of overdoses.
Correct.
And so,
his office.
So Dr. Jenkins was one of them that was not practicing that way.
No,
as far as what you know.
Correct. And that's where another charge came in, is because when he would take these pills back, the nurses would count them, make sure that there was the right pills, that they were taking the correct dosage. And they would log it into the computer, and they had a box in the back in the warehouse, which was not accessible to the public like the state says. One state agent said that it was right there where you could grab it, and then another state agent said you had to kind of maneuver through all this stuff to get back there. And they said that that was illegal. They said that the doctor shouldn't have taken the pills. He shouldn't have put them in that box. He should have flushed them down the toilet. And there was even
that
an agent
that makes no sense whatsoever, because then that poisons the water system. But you told me they actually put them in, what is it called?
They put it in a bio box with a red bio bag, because a company named Stericycle would come, and when they'd pick up the sharps, they would pick up those medications, and they'd bag them up, close the box. And when that guy would come, I'd have to escort him back there, open the garage door. He would load up, put another empty box down, and I would sign his computer, and it printed off a receipt that he took custody.
Okay.
Well, now the state was saying that you're not supposed to do that, even though this company specializes in destructions of meds. They say it on their website. But the one of the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics agents said that it was illegal, that they should have flushed them. And when people cross-examined him and they're like, you're not supposed to flush them, they say that it messes up the water supply. And his response is, well, the science is still out on that. And we're like, no, the science is not out on that. That's what happened.
You can't
do that.
Oh, he's got some reading up to do, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You had also shared with me, and again, this isn't about really defending the doctor as much as it is, you know, trying to tell your story, but you had also shared with me that he did the UA test, your analysis test, each time, was it?
Yes.
Once a month?
No. Any time a patient came in, like an existing patient, they had to come back every 28 days. When that
mm-hmm.
patient came in, the first thing that every patient had to do before they were seen, when they checked in, you had to go pee in a cup. You had to do a urinalysis. And they had a machine back there that could run a quick urinalysis on it, and they could tell if you had the medications in your system. They could tell if you had a certain amount of levels, if you were taking them like you're supposed to. They could tell if you were, like, taking a couple before you went. Sorry. They could tell if you were taking, like, a couple pills before the visit. To make the system think that they were doing it. I mean, their system was
pretty. As opposed to selling them on the street, is that what you mean?
So, and if you didn't do a UA, they would not see you. They would not let you check in. They wouldn't let you go back and see the doctor, and you would have to reschedule.
And yet, here this doctor is being charged with all of these offenses that just seem to be in contradiction to how he actually ran his business. Although, and albeit, that, you know, there was an error in using the other doctor's stamp and signature, and then they fixed that, and that he would come in late sometimes.
He would come in late. He'd come in about 10:30, 11 o'clock. He had a hard time. I mean, he's a doctor. He's like most doctors. They don't ever show up to their clinic on time, which the nurses would see his existing patients, which I never saw a problem with that. I never realized that, you know, thought anything about it. They didn't see his new ones, but they saw the existing ones. I was under the assumption that as long as he was so many minutes away, that was feasible to do, which I later found out the state said that the nurses weren't supposed to see them unless he was in there. And that's where another charge, the Medicaid fraud charge, came in, is that they said that he frauded Medicaid because he did not see patients for more than 15 minutes, or for 15 minutes, and that because the nurses saw them, that was the Medicaid fraud. Now, I never knew that you had to spend a certain amount of time with a patient for insurance, because I've been to the doctor, and when I go to the doctor, I think I'm there for 3 minutes, and they're like, okay, here's some antibiotics, have a good day, and you're like, okay.
And it's not, but it's not your job to know that either. Your security.
No, this is the first
medical office. And yet you were charged with that, weren't you?
Yes, they charged me with Medicaid fraud, filing false claims to Medicaid, and I'm
like, I don't.
Is that
outrageous, listeners? So here Mike is, and he's security, and he is charged with Medicaid fraud, right? So now, why isn't mainstream covering this? Hello out there, mainstream, where are you? Why aren't you willing to tell the other side of the story? And is it because the narrative must be what the state says it must be? Because otherwise you won't have a job either? You know, otherwise you'll be sorry too? Otherwise you'll wish you lied? You know, this, I'm sorry, this is truly an issue that we need to bring to the forefront. You know, what good is, and I know there's, you know what, I know that not every cop is bad, right? I know that every lawyer isn't bad. I know every judge isn't bad. I know that every FBI agent isn't bad. I know that every April Carpenter isn't bad, but I think she is. I know that not everybody is bad here, but here in this particular situation, you know, we're not having people step up to the plate and talk about the other side. And you know what? I can't stand when sometimes people say there's two sides to every story. Well, why is it that only one side has been told? And why can't people recognize that maybe there really is only one side to the story, and that's the truth? And just maybe, listeners, and I believe if you're listening, you probably have a hint of what the truth really is. Just maybe you're hearing the truth right now. And everybody out there that's been part of the wrong thing here, they're just trying to save face. Now, the prosecutor's got to have his little ratio of how many things he prosecutes, and you know, huge ego-ridden and driven industry, which, you know what, I've got a brother who's a prosecutor. He's been for 30-something years, okay? Guess what? He's one of the good ones. Do I always agree with what he does? You know, what happens? No. But then I take a look back and I say, hey, he's following the law. He's not a liar. He's not telling somebody that they'll regret it. You know, we've got to speak up, people. We really need to come together and show what is going on out there. If the mainstream media can't cover a story fully and completely, if they have to be partial and actually give up the creed of you know, and what they believed in, and what, you know, they became a journalist, a reporter for a reason. Was it to be held hostage by the state and what they want you to tell? Come on, you guys. We can do better than this out there. You know, step out of your comfort zone. You have a little risk here. You know, make yourselves into something more than what they've made you into, because that does nobody any good. Then you might as well just, you know, be a lay down, because that's what you're being, is a lay down. If you're not willing and able to get that out there and speak the truth, stand up for what's just and what's right, which is both stories. You don't have to be the judge and jury, but tell both stories, mainstream media. Let's go. I'm sorry. I went off on my little rant.
No, you're fine.
I mean, you know what? It keeps me busy. I know that. Because I'm going to let people have their voice, and I'm going to help tell their story.
Well, and
Go right ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, what you're saying is truth, because like the day I got arrested, the day I got out, one of my fellow deputies was like, hey, have you seen the paper? And I'm like, no, I've been in jail all night. Why? And we go to the newspaper, the Daily Oklahoman, and there's the doctor on the first page saying that pill mill doctor arrested, blah, blah, blah. And then on the second page, there's my picture saying that I was arrested, his most trusted friend, his muscle, his best pal in the world. And I'm just like, what? What are you talking about? I'm not, we weren't pals. We weren't best friends. We didn't hang out. We didn't party. We didn't do anything. But the media
put that. Did you know him before you took the job there, Mike?
No, I did not.
Okay. Did you ever go out for drinks? Did you hang out?
No.
No.
I never hung out with that man. He did his thing, and I did my thing. I have my friends, and I guess he had his, but we never hung out. We never had long conversations on the phone. About the most we did was we were Facebook friends and might comment on a post or something. But that's the way the media put it, and they said that I was his muscle. I was the muscle for the pill mill place, and they never came to me and got my side of the story. They aired it on him. It was on the news, and, of course, in the paper at the very bottom of their story, it's like, we cannot confirm or deny the facts of this story. It was given to us by law enforcement. But I never heard anybody come and ask me for my side, which at that time I was told not to say anything because I would anger the people doing the case, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, you know, I just figured that they were messing with me, trying to get me stressed out to tell them something, which I never, right. I'm never going to lie for.
Right. Good for you. Good for you. But that being said, you're looking at, with all these charges added up, 800 years, aren't you?
Yes. Because like I said, they took the practicing medicine without a license off. But they charged me with 13, distribution 2,000 feet from a park, identity theft, Medicaid fraud, using another person's identity, and I can't remember the others, but there was like 6 or 7 charges, but they stacked them to make 26.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I have no way to even have done these charges. It's like, I understand if you're charging the doctor or the nurses, that makes sense, but wait, what? It's like, I guess I made somebody mad.
And so we've got 2 that have pled guilty, 1 that is doing time for 5 years because she, you know, apparently, you know, that she was in fear or whatever her story is. She, you know, she pled guilty because otherwise she'd be sorry. Potentially, who knows, right? And then there's another one who is out on deferment for 5 years?
Well, no. There's one nurse that, but when this all first happened, the one that had they gotten in Arizona, she instantly went straight and said, yeah, I'm guilty. I guess they made her a deal and they took off a bunch of stuff. She got 5 years in prison and I think 5 years probation. The second nurse, she waived preliminary while the rest of us went. I eventually waived preliminary because I realized that it was a joke and that they were going to hold us all over anyway, and it was just wasting money that I didn't have. So she waived it. We had to wait for the rest of the people in preliminary to catch up. When they caught up, she made a deal where she got a 5-year deferred sentence with some probation, and I'm guessing it's because, like everybody else, we're running out of money and we can't afford it, so they offered her, hey, you don't have to do jail time. And like most people do, because I've seen it in the profession, you know, they get tired of fighting. And when you say, hey, we'll give you time on paper, just say that, sign here that you're guilty. And people do it because they're tired of fighting. They don't have the money to fight anymore.
Sure. They're exhausted.
Then, yeah. And I mean, that happens all the time. That's how they get convictions. And then you've got me, the office manager / owner, another nurse, and the doctor still fighting for this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time I would have taken a deferred sentence, but I just can't do it. I cannot say I'm guilty of something that never happened. I cannot do it. They've already trashed my name and my reputation and made me lose my kid and everything. I just can't do it. I cannot lie for them, and I can't admit that I did something that I didn't.
And so much for a speedy trial here, too, right? Can you tell me about that? They're not allowing for a speedy trial? You requested a speedy trial?
Yeah, well, because we got arrested April of 2016, and I think our next court date was like May or something.
You have a court date on May 30th. You have a court date May 30th that has to do with your transcripts, which you have to pay $450 a month for. Is that it?
Correct, because the transcript, they really said it was $18,000 for what the court reporter typed up in preliminary, and then it went from $18,000 to $28,000. And we went to show that we were indigent, that we couldn't afford that, which the court said, you're not indigent, but we can see where you can't pay for this. So your portion is you got to pay $6,000, each one of you, and then the taxpayers will pay the rest of it.
As opposed to just having one certified copy for everybody.
Right, because that was, I think, the defense's first deal was if someone got indigent, they were going to make copies of it. And then just give it to everybody else. But the courts are like, nope, everybody's got to pay.
Yeah, nice, real nice. And so, okay, and while we were talking, I just want to give a quote that you had said, and, you know, about your overall feeling, and not necessarily towards everybody, but towards, like, this kind of a thing that happens, is law enforcement is not about helping people, it's about making money. And that's how you're feeling about this particular case right now. Is that right?
Yes, and to be honest with you, I was kind of getting burned out in law enforcement because I felt like law enforcement was losing the concept of protecting and serving. And with all the budget cuts, it's like, hey, let's go out and write tickets. Let's go out and charge all these people. Let's arrest all these people. Let's make some money. And in this case, it seems like it's, of course, all about money. It's just law enforcement
it's all about
is about helping people. Not writing tickets and arresting people just because, hey, you know, we got to make ends meet. And now not every cop does that, but it's just, right. It seems like it's a money-making business. And the court system right now, you know, I have to pay all these court fees that I don't know what they are. I'm having to pay $6,000 for a $28,000 transcript, which blows my mind that something would cost that much.
Right.
And it's
and
sad
here you are.
Taxpayers. Yeah.
And I want the listeners to also hear that they wanted Mike to go into the general population when they put him in jail for a night, right? Until you were able to bond out. They
yes,
wanted to put him in the general population where the general population actually knew you're a police officer. Is that
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Because when I went in there, I was like, man, I can't be put in general pop because I worked here. And the other agents were just kind of like, okay, we'll make sure. But the lead agent was like, she was just seemed like, nope, you're going to general pop. You're going to general pop. And her agents, one said, hey, I got to get a drink of water. And he leaned over to me and whispered and was like, hey, I'm going to make sure they don't put you in general pop. And I'm just kind of like, why are you whispering this to me? Why can't you say it in front of her? And he walked off and went around the corner and talked to the sergeant and made sure. But she wanted to put me in general pop. I guess she knew I was going to get jumped. And I'm just kind of like, wow, what is wrong here? Why is she so upset? Why is she hell-bent on trying to destroy me?
And that's April Carpenter?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And now, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So I'm going to have to we've got 2 minutes to go. But we're going to follow up on this show, everybody. And for Randall, who tried to call in, and any of the other listeners who know anything about this or have any kind of opinion on it, please go to my Facebook page, Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed, and feel free to make a comment on the post about this show. We will be following up on this. Also, go to Marty Oakley, a TS Radio, Marty Oakley, and you can make comments there if you're listening via the internet. Mike, I'm going to have to cut you off at this point, but we are going to follow up on this show, and I want to thank you very much for coming on, and we will need to hear more from you, okay?
Yes,
an hour just isn't enough.
It.
Okay, well, you're more than welcome. And listeners, thank you for listening to Tanya Hathaway at TNT Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told. And please be sure to listen in to Carly Walden's show tomorrow, Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Regarding medical murder and the hospice system. Very valuable information. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in, and please do. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from all of you. And thank you so very much, and have a great night. God bless.